This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. For $140, you can provide ultrasounds to five women in crisis pregnancies. Call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or visit preborn.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thanks so much for joining us again. Well, what a huge victory for pro-lifers and for free speech. The U.S. Supreme Court striking down the California Reproductive Fact Act, which forced pro-life pregnancy centers in that state to advertise and promote abortions. The court said the law likely violates the First Amendment. And we'll get reaction now from Catherine Glenn Foster, president and CEO of Americans United for Life, which filed a friend of the court brief in this case of Nifla v. Becerra. Catherine, it's great to have you here. How are you?
Thanks so much for having me.
I knew you'd be happy. I really didn't have to ask how you were, did I?
I'm pretty happy. We are all pretty happy here at the office. It is just so heartening to know that the U.S. Supreme Court recognizes that the pregnancy resource centers have free speech rights, but it is absolutely wrong to force anyone into speaking the government's message, and especially when that message is a pro-abortion, anti-life message. That is beyond the pale, and the Supreme Court recognized that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So give people a little background on this law in California, because I think for many listeners, they still don't understand why in the world the state would try to compel speech out of pro-lifers in the first place. Why did this ever get enacted in the first place?
Well, one thing that was made clear before the court is that this really was passed to target pregnancy resource centers. It was not broadly applicable to other kinds of medical clinics. That's something that even the more liberal justices on the Supreme Court pointed out. It really was targeted at pregnancy resource centers. And so the disclosure was overbroad. What it required was that pregnancy resource centers hang a sign on their wall. It specified the size, the font size, all different kinds of aspects of the sign, and said you have to hang up this sign advertising free abortion, saying that the state of California would provide free and low-cost abortions to women who have walked through their doors, seeking an entirely different kind of service. And then moreover, many of those centers would have been forced, anytime they advertised or put forth any of their materials, it would have had to have been translated in 13 different languages, wow. Which is obviously it has space implications when you're talking about printing this out. It has cost implications, and it's just, again, forced speech.
Yes, it is. Well, and it was not the case that this Reproductive Fact Act required abortion clinics to tell women where they could go to save their babies' lives. So it wasn't like they were doing it on both sides of the aisle.
Right, exactly, exactly. And, you know, one of the things that came up there, and this is something that we at AUL, we raised in our friend of the court brief, a sign on the wall is not informed consent. The other side, our opponents, were saying that it was part of informed consent to have this sign up on the wall, even though it had nothing to do with the actual services that pregnancy resource centers were offering. They weren't offering abortions, so it wasn't really relevant. It's a compelled disclosure here. It wasn't informed consent. It did not relate to any of the medical procedures that pregnancy centers offer, and that was strongly affirmed by the Supreme Court again. In fact, they said, and this is a quote, "The license notice at issue here is not an informed consent requirement or any other regulation of professional conduct. The notice does not facilitate informed consent to a medical procedure. In fact, it is not tied to a procedure at all." Hmm. They recognized that it was about a totally different thing.
Right, which is significant. And I thought it was very interesting, too, Catherine, that where we had pro-abort activists from NARAL and the Center for Reproductive Rights arguing that this law was necessary because of the manipulation and deception of pregnant women, One of the things I went on to read was that they have not produced a single testimony from a woman who's actually been harmed from a pregnancy center. So how is it that California can just overlook the lack of evidence of what they're claiming in order to move forward with the act, other than the fact that they promote the ideology of the pro-abortion cause?
You know, that's a really good point, and it reminds me of that 2016 abortion case from Texas, Whole Woman Chelsea Hellerstedt, where, again, they were asking for the story. And in this case, we saw very clearly that because the other side did not have testimony, did not have a story to back them up, I think that played a large role in this. The truth is, this case was not about ensuring full informed consent for women considering abortion. And we had, in our front of the court brief, we wrote on behalf of thousands upon thousands of doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals, more than 20,000 of them, saying that they need the freedom to share the facts about abortion plainly and truthfully. The same thing that our nation's 2,500-plus pregnancy resource centers do every single day, more than 5-to-1 as compared to abortion clinics. There are so many more pregnancy resource centers out there offering encouragement, education, training, information, life, hope, concrete resources like diapers and formula and baby clothes and so many things that women in often difficult situations do need.
Yeah, absolutely. It was interesting, too. It has been the case, right, Catherine, that these sorts of situations where the government is compelling speech for pregnancy centers, that's gone to court before and been found unconstitutional, I understand, in other locations, correct? In New York and in Baltimore, mm-hmm. places like that.
You're absolutely right. And yet we see state after state, jurisdiction after jurisdiction, do their best, listening to the complaints and the pressure of the abortion lobby and the abortion industry, and they're in so many cases bowing down to that, saying, "Okay, we're gonna try to force speech upon pregnancy resource centers and make them say things that that are just clearly anti-life, clearly pro-abortion, and a complete violation of their free speech rights." So strong victory for free speech, for the First Amendment, for life, for pregnancy resource centers, and for the women, the children, the families who find hope there.
Right. Well, now, what sort of broadness do you think this decision will have? In other words, we've talked recently about other cases where the decision was rather narrow, Jack Phillips being an example where they ruled that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had religious hostility toward him. And so it was not a broad-based decision that would affect every Christian in the wedding industry. What about here? Will this have broad implications, do you think, for pregnancy resource centers?
I do believe that this one will. You know, this case, it is saying that you cannot force speech upon pregnancy resource centers. And when you come up with some excuse, like saying, oh, it has to be with informed consent for a procedure you don't even offer, that's something that the court is going to see through. And so I would hope that the abortion industry, the abortion lobby, would listen to this and give up on this front, give up on this plan of attack, and recognize that you can't go against the First Amendment.
Right. And it really should be the sort of case where a lot of Americans can agree that the government should not be able to compel your speech. That's really the broader issue here.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's true in any number of industries. We can think about that. And there are so many different kinds of businesses that this could implicate, where we do not want government coming in, or our competitors, you could call them opponents in whatever industry it is, whatever belief system, to be able to come in and dictate what you hang on your wall. Walls can talk, you know, and the Supreme Court recognized and affirmed that Americans have the right to determine what stories their walls are going to tell. And that's certainly true when it comes to pro-life advocates and pregnancy resource centers.
Very good. Well, Catherine Glenn Foster, so good to have you here. Americans United for Life, you can check them out at AUL.org. Thank you so much, Catherine. This hour of Janet Mefford Today is brought to you by Preborn. For your gift of $140, 5 women in crisis pregnancies can obtain free ultrasounds, helping them to choose life for their babies. Call now, 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229, or preborn.com. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today, and we'll be right back. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care, so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org, and regain control over your healthcare costs. That number again, 855-585-4237 or libertyhealthshare.org. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
Many people in developing nations have no access to desperately needed medical care. That's why Mercy Ships brings volunteers aboard our hospital ship, the Africa Mercy, to give the world's forgotten poor the free medical care they need. We have an immediate need for registered nurses, especially with a pediatric specialty. As a volunteer nurse, you won't just give life-altering health care. You'll receive so much in return.
It's an amazingly rewarding experience.
You'll give hope and make a difference in the lives of those who have virtually no access to medical aid.
It's such a fantastic thing to do. Everybody who I've met on this ship either wants to come back and do it again, or they're already here for the second, third, or tenth time.
So what are you waiting for? Show mercy to someone today.
I would say go for it.
Get more information and learn how to apply by visiting mercyships.org/nurses. That's mercyships.org/nurses.
Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. You might remember the case involving a former high school football coach by the name of Joe Kennedy. Last year, a 3-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit held that the coach's school district could fire him because he silently prayed alone for 15 to 30 seconds following football games. But now attorneys for First Liberty Institute have filed a petition with the Supreme Court asking for that decision to be reversed. We're going to hear more about it now from Mike Berry, Senior Counsel and Director of Military Affairs for First Liberty Institute. Mike, great to have you here.
It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I know a lot of people remember the Coach Kennedy case. It got a lot of national attention, and perhaps you could bring people up to speed on this. I know there was a lot of legal activity. He had filed a lawsuit against the school district. He had found this decision last year at the Ninth Circuit. But bring people up to speed, if you would, on why Coach Kennedy was in trouble in the first place for praying.
Well, I mean, it's really kind of a sad story because it just goes to show that no good deed goes unpunished. You know, when Coach Kennedy accepted the job as a football coach at Bremerton School District just outside of Seattle, he made a promise to God that after every game, win or lose, no matter how the team played, he was going to give thanks just for, you know, for what the players had just done. If somebody got hurt, that they would be recover quickly and get back out on the field. Somebody paid a compliment to the school district about what Coach Kennedy did, and in response, kind of, I guess this is just the normal response of government these days, is in response to a compliment, they decided to investigate what Coach Kennedy was doing. And, you know, initially they said, look, our policy is you can do, you know, engage in religious activity as long as it is physically separate from the students. And, you know, we looked at that and discussed with Coach Kennedy. We said, look, that's fine. You know, that's a good policy, that you know, or at least that's a lawful policy.
Right.
And you know, we can do that. And so Coach Kennedy complied with that directive. Well, the problem was when it started to draw some attention. So then the school district said, well, okay, you know, we've got to change the rules here. The new policy is you cannot engage in any what they described as visibly religious activity. So anything visibly religious, if it's in within eyesight of members of the public or students. Right? So if somebody can see you do it, then we don't allow it anymore. Well, of course, now that crosses the line. That's not lawful. That's not constitutional. And we told the school district, you can't do that. You know, that violates his constitutional rights.
Right.
And they said, well, he's an employee. We can tell him, you know, we can decide what we want him to do and not do. And so that's what really led to the dispute to begin with. And, you know, Coach Kennedy served for 20 years as a U.S. Marine. He's a combat veteran. And, you know, in his words, he said, look, they picked on the wrong Marine. You know, I didn't serve for 20 years, put my life on the line for everybody else's freedoms, only to come back and lose mine. And so we were, you know, forced to file a lawsuit in federal court. Of course, you know, we knew in the Ninth Circuit it was going to be tough. We lost at the Ninth Circuit. And their ruling is really what opened the door for the Supreme Court to hopefully take this case. Because what the Ninth Circuit said is outrageous and should cause alarm bells to go off across the country. They said, look, you know, if you are a public employee, you know, a teacher, a high school football coach or whatever, and you're engaging in religious activity, you are no longer doing so as a private citizen. If people in public can see you doing it, right? So they were going along with what the school district said is like, look, if people can see you doing it, then you lose the protection of the First Amendment because now you're out in public and people can see you. And, you know, this goes all the way back to a Supreme Court case that was decided decades ago where the Supreme Court famously said neither students nor teachers lose their First Amendment rights when they enter the schoolhouse gates. And so the question before the Supreme Court now that we've asked, you know, at First Liberty Institute, we said, look, is that still the rule? Is that still the law of the land? Or is what the Ninth Circuit said the new rule? And that's what we're hoping the Supreme Court will take up.
That's crazy. I mean, I went back and looked at some of what the court had ruled last year, and they said that the coach took advantage of his position to press his particular views upon impressionable and captive minds before him. That's not even accurate, right? Because as I understand it, Coach Kennedy had, if kids wanted to pray with him, they could, but he certainly didn't compel any of them to come along and pray with him.
That's right. You know, one of the very first things that happened when the students saw what Coach Kennedy was doing, this was like 8 years ago, 9 years ago now, as they came up to him, they said, hey, Coach, what are you doing out there? You know, they just saw him by himself, right, and kneeling. They didn't know if he was tying a shoe or looking for a lost contact lens, you know, and they said, what are you doing out there? And he said, I'm just giving thanks. And then a couple weeks later, some of the students came up and said, hey, if we want to do that, are we allowed to? And his response was golden. He said, it's a free country. You can do whatever you want.
Right.
And again, he complied with the school district policy when they told him to, which is they said, look, if you're going to do it, fine. And if the students do it, that's fine. You can't be with them when you're doing this. And he said, that's okay. You know, I get that. And I'll and so what he would do is wait until after the game when the students had left the field and were over in the stands singing the fight song and high-fiving their friends, and that's when he chose to do it, is at that moment when the students were away from him, and the school district still said, yeah, well, we, you know, now the rule is if somebody can see you do it, then we won't allow it.
That is just such an arbitrary thing to say. And I know the panel ruled, this was from the Seattle Times last year, that the coach's behavior could reasonably be seen as the district's endorsement of his beliefs in violation of the Establishment Clause, which prevents the government from endorsing one religion over another. My question is, how would people know which God he was praying to? How are you establishing a religion by having a coach kneel and pray when you can't even hear who he's praying to?
Well, you know, what's funny, we asked for a religious accommodation, right, of the school and said, look, what about just a moment of silence?
Yeah.
15 to 30 seconds of silence because he doesn't have to pray audibly. You know, he right. can just pray silently.
Right.
And the response was, well, we know what he's actually doing. Right? It's like, well,
we
how
know
do you know?
What you're doing.
How
yeah.
do you know? You know,
yeah.
you can read people's minds now.
Yeah.
And to the question or to the issue about, you know, the quote that you provided from the Ninth Circuit, you know, it's funny that's actually contradicted by the school district itself that says that their investigation revealed no evidence that any student had ever been coerced or required to participate. That the coach always told students they're free to do what they want. I have this commitment, this religious conviction to do this over here, but I don't, you know, it's separate. It's separate and distinct. And there's a famous court case that says, look, if there is any confusion about when a school employee or even a student, you know, is because it was in the context of a graduation speaker, right? So a valedictorian getting up on First Liberty, we deal with these cases too all the time. And the school districts always want to say, well, we can't allow a valedictorian to, you know, invoke religion, right? Or we can't, in this case, we can't allow a coach to do anything religious. And the question is, why? It's like, well, people might think that the school is sponsoring or endorsing that. And the court in this famous case said, yeah, the response to the answer to that dilemma is to educate the audience, not squelch the speaker.
Good.
Right? Isn't it the whole point of our school system, right, is to teach what the Constitution is about, to teach people what our rights and freedoms are and not silence people simply out of fear. And that's what's happening in this case, and that's why the Supreme Court has to put a stop to it.
Well, right. You can see all of the crazy ramifications that could come from instituting a policy that says nobody can see you being religious. I mean, you can think of a lot of things that could fall under that category. That seems to open a whole new Pandora's box of oppression against Christians and people who just want to live their lives under the First Amendment, even if they're employees of a school district. It's crazy.
That's right. And so, you know, I encourage people to go to firstliberty.org. We can see, you know, kind of everything that's happened up to this point. You know, there's a lot more to the story in terms of kind of some of the background about Coach Kennedy that's very important here. And so, again, you know, firstliberty.org is a great place to learn more about this case and many of the other ones. In fact, Monday wasn't just – Coach Kennedy wasn't the only case we filed at the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. We also filed in the case of a veterans memorial that's been up since, you know, for 90 years – that has come under attack by an atheist organization that wants it destroyed simply because it happens to be in the shape of a cross.
Yes, that's right. Oh, there's so many important things that need to be taken up. Do you have pretty high hopes, Mike, that the high court would take up this case? Because it does seem to have widespread effect on other people. I mean, it seems like it would be a very important issue for them to address.
It is an important issue, right? I mean, first and foremost, it's whether or not the Supreme Court's decision from decades ago called Tinker versus Des Moines, where they said, you know, you don't lose your First Amendment rights when you enter the schoolhouse, is that still good law? And then, I mean, secondarily, it probably even, perhaps even more important for our time is, look, you know, at First Liberty Institute, we get calls from teachers, coaches, just, you know, administrators from all over the country. You know, this case, Coach Kennedy's case happened outside of Seattle, Washington. But, you know, we get calls from places like Florida and, you know, North Carolina saying, wait a minute. You know, I'm a public school football coach, and I pretty much do the same thing that Coach Kennedy does.
Right.
I take, you know, well, what about, you know, it's a game-winning field goal. Am I not allowed to take a knee and say a quick prayer that my kicker makes the field goal? Am I going to get fired for that? And so that's where you start to see the far-reaching ramifications of these terrible decisions that we have in these courts. Is they don't just affect one person's right. They affect millions of people's constitutional freedoms and liberties. And those are the freedoms that again, Coach Kennedy fought for as a U.S. Marine. To me, that's what, you know, kind of really the bitter irony of this case is that somebody who was willing to put his life on the line to defend these freedoms is now having to fight in the courts to preserve his, you know, to preserve those very same freedoms.
You're absolutely right. Well, Mike Berry from First Liberty Institute, check them out at firstliberty.org. We'll be back on Janet Mefford Today after this. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. For $140, you can provide ultrasounds to 5 women in crisis pregnancies. Call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or visit preborn.com. We're back on Janet Mefford Today, and it seems to be a Supreme Court kind of day. So let's talk a little bit more about something else that occurred yesterday at the High Court, and that was the decision handed down to uphold President Trump's travel ban. In fact, it was the third version of the travel ban, but third time was a charm. And really, the court did the right thing. It really recognized the importance of deferring to the executive branch to have a broad ability to decide national security measures related to immigration and so forth. And I'll get into that in a little bit. But Pete Williams from MSNBC had this to say. This is interesting. Cut one.
The decision says that President Trump wins. The Supreme Court has upheld the president's travel ban. This is the third version of the attempt to restrict travel from mostly Muslim countries after the first two were struck down or had a bad time in the lower courts. But by a 5-4 ruling, the Supreme Court says that the president has the power to control this kind of immigration in the interest of national security. You may recall the administration said this version was different, that it was enacted after surveying the policies of 200 countries around the world to see how well they gave the United States information about people who applied for visas to come to the U.S. and how good they were at fighting terrorism in their own borders. Now, after going through that whole process, they still had the same ban on 5 of the 7 original countries that were covered by the first travel ban that was enacted shortly after the president came into office. But stepping aside from the specifics, this is a big legal victory for the president. It comes, of course, during a time when his administration is mired in an entirely different kind of immigration question. But on this one, by a 5-4 ruling with the court's conservatives in the majority, joined by Justice Anthony Kennedy, and the court's liberals upholding the president's travel ban, striking down a lower court order that had blocked the administration from imposing the travel ban. Now, as a practical matter, the government has already been enforcing this restriction that was announced last September. The Supreme Court in December sort of prefigured today's decision by lifting a stay that had been put in place by a judge after a lawsuit from Hawaii and several Muslim organizations and Muslim individuals who said that it violated religious freedom. So, Craig, a big victory for the president.
Well, it certainly was a big victory for the president, and it was a big win for the American people. The 5 countries in the latest policy are Iran, Libya, Syria, Somalia, and Yemen. Those are the 5 countries affected. Now, it's interesting, as the Hill reports, Hawaii, which had led this challenge, argues that Trump's indefinite policy is a Muslim ban that discriminates against immigrants based on their religion in violation of immigration law, which is ridiculous because even Justice Roberts, who penned the majority opinion, said the proclamation properly identifies a class of aliens whose entry is suspended, and the word class comfortably encompasses a group of people linked by nationality. Here's the other thing that I find so interesting. What they don't want to talk about, and Justice Sotomayor was discussing some of the possibilities about religious hostility, referencing the Jack Phillips case, because the Colorado Civil Rights Commission clearly showed religious hostility toward him. Of course, she didn't vote in favor of Jack Phillips in that case, but lay that aside for a moment. She was trying to make a case that, in fact, religious hostility was shown there, and perhaps you could make the same case from President Trump's tweets here. The problem is this. Jack Phillips, number one, is an American citizen. Number two, there's no terrorism involved. What was the reason that President Trump wanted to enact a travel ban in the beginning? And from the very beginning, it was because of the terrorism problem. Now, is it our fault that terrorism has a very strong link to one particular religion? No, it is not our fault. It is not President Trump's fault. It's nobody's fault but those who are committing those acts of terrorism. So you have to acknowledge the reality on the ground is what it is. That doesn't fly, apparently, with Sonia Sotomayor. But That's just the way it goes sometimes. So Trump gets his travel ban. Now, I thought it was very interesting how you heard Pete Williams in that cut that I played referencing the president's other problems pertaining to immigration. Now, I will say, yes, it's true. There has been a lot of controversy surrounding what's been going on with these families separated at the border, but it had nothing to do with the travel ban. He threw it in as a gratuitous reminder. Well, he may be winning here, but he's not winning over here. I found this to be over-the-top commentary by Joe Scarborough yesterday on Morning Joe, in which he tries to link the immigration policy to the fact that Vice President Pence is a terrible Christian. Listen to cut two.
Mike Pence says he's a Christian first. That's fantastic. I'm sure he is. I do wonder if he has Jefferson's Bible, if he's cut out Matthew 25, if he's cut out the part where Jesus actually is asked by disciples, who is going to be able to sit on your right hand and who's going to be cast away? And Jesus goes through the list and he talks about anyone that does this for the least among us is doing it to me. They will be with the sheep. Those who don't will be tossed out, will be with the goats. I mean, it's as straightforward. It's the red letters in the New Testament.
Well, except for the fact that he's misinterpreting Matthew chapter 25. By the way, did Thomas Jefferson omit Matthew 25 from his Bible? Because my recollection is that Thomas Jefferson cut out the miracles. He had a problem with the miracles. I don't recall him having a problem with Matthew 25, but perhaps I'm wrong about that. Be that as it may, his exegesis here is wretched, but let's listen to the rest of what he had to say. Joe Scarborough from Morning Joe, now the great theologian of the left. Cut three.
It is one of the few times where Jesus says, and I'm not a theologian. My parents did make me go to Baptist churches four times a week for about 21 years. It didn't take, but I do remember a lot of Bible verses. It is one of the few times in the New Testament where Jesus doesn't say we are saved by faith and we are saved by grace, which we are. It's one of the few times, though, Jesus says, this is what you have to do to get to heaven, and if you don't do it, you will not get to heaven. One of the few times he says, this is it, and it is giving a cup of water in the Master's name, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, visiting those in prison, and again, helping the least among us.
Oh, man, I don't think I'm going to have enough time to go through all of this and debunk it, but I'm going to try. I'm certainly going to try. He went to church four times a week for 21 years, and he still doesn't know what Matthew 25 means. This is the parable of the sheep and the goats. We know about this. The shepherd will separate the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. He's talking about the judgment, by the way. And when the Lord says, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. About whom is he speaking? Who inherits the kingdom? Those who belong to Jesus Christ by faith. It isn't a works righteousness passage here. He's talking about those who belong to him will sit on his right hand, and those who are the wicked, who did not demonstrate their faith in Jesus Christ by the way that they lived, they will be the ones who will go into eternal punishment. He's talking about the judgment. He's not saying if you have a bunch of people who are being separated at the border, then you are not doing what I've told the sheep to do and you will go to hell. I mean, is that really what he's trying to say? Mike Pence will go to hell if he upholds this particular passage in the way that Joe Scarborough, who says Christianity didn't take for him, but he's a great theologian now, even though he says he's not a theologian. How many times can he talk out of both sides of his mouth? He alone is going to tell Mike Pence, first of all, it's your fault, Mike Pence. He didn't write the law either. He's upholding the law as part of the administration. Isn't that what all elected officials are supposed to do? Uphold the law. And if you don't like the law and the law is lousy, change the law. Right. This is what the Trump administration has been saying. You should change the law. So come to the table, Democrats. They don't want to necessarily come to the table and fix all of this because they can blame this on Trump and they can run a Time magazine cover where they're showing a little girl who looks so sad and pathetic and forlorn. And then they can misrepresent the fact that that little girl, in fact, was not separated from her mother at the border. But let's lay that aside because it's a metaphor for how evil Donald Trump is. Really? That's where we're going with this. And by the way, I thought the left said there's a separation of church and state. All of a sudden, they're quoting the Bible. All of a sudden, the Bible, which didn't take with Joe Scarborough, becomes a convenient means of criticizing Vice President Mike Pence and insinuating that he's going to hell for what's going on at the border. Ugh, horrible exegesis, sir. Stick to bad morning TV. We'll come back on Janet Mefford Today.
When I first found out I was pregnant, I was surrounded by fear and disbelief. When I told my boyfriend at the time, he told me to get an abortion. There was no negotiation.
This is the story of a young lady who decided to keep her baby after hearing her baby's beautiful heartbeat on ultrasound. The Ministry of Preborn provides ultrasounds for pregnancy centers across America for free. When an abortion-minded woman hears her baby's heartbeat on ultrasound, she is 80% more likely to keep her baby. And the story doesn't end there.
My son, Rhett, turned 5 months this week. And even though there are still uncertainties in my life, the one thing I know for sure is I get to watch him grow.
Your gift of $140 will cover the cost of 5 ultrasounds. All donations are tax deductible. You can help save a baby's life right here in America by donating to Preborn. To donate, dial #250, keyword baby, #250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org, and regain control over your healthcare costs. That number again, 855-585-4237 or libertyhealthshare.org. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Joe Scarborough, the non-theologian from Morning Joe, has weighed in on Matthew 25 and decided that Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, is certainly not a good Christian because he is separating families at the border, and therefore he's in violation of the sheep and the goats passage, except for the fact that that is not a passage teaching that salvation comes through works, righteousness. If you understand anything about the context of the passage, which I know many people don't take the time to look at, you will understand what they point out at Christian Apologetics and Research Ministry. Notice in that passage, Jesus said that the kingdom was prepared for them. This means that the people are already believers. In verse 37 of Matthew 25, Jesus says, "Then the righteous will answer him, saying, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink?'" They are righteous. They're believers who have the righteousness of God. It is the righteous, the believers who do the good works. It isn't the good works that makes you righteous. Those who are already sheep are doing the good deeds, and they inherit eternal life. And furthermore, inheritance is for those who are children of the King by birth. So they're already born again. They don't become born again by doing good works. They do good deeds because they are sheep. And conversely, those who do not do good deeds are showing that they're not sheep. He's not teaching righteousness by faith and works. He's teaching on the coming judgment, and that those who are truly sheep will have done the things that are right, and they will inherit eternal life because they are his. Those who don't will be judged by that law and be damned. That's what it means. And it certainly never mentions illegal aliens at the border of the United States in 2018. Now, let's flesh this out a little bit, shall we? Let's do this. One more crazy comment from the Morning Joe segment yesterday that I must get to is from former GOP strategist Steve Schmidt, who had this to say. Cut four.
Extraordinary and astounding hypocrisy of it. To see the constancy of the assertion of Christian virtue by political leaders in this country who have established internment camps for babies and toddlers. And by the way, and I never in a million years thought I would sit here or anywhere and say this, but the difference now between Venezuela and Cuba and the United States is this. Venezuela and Cuba are the countries without internment camps for babies and toddlers.
I don't even know what to say about that guy. He's so off the rails at this point. But here's what's relevant about this. It was the case that Mike Wallace over at Fox News Sunday interviewed former DHS Secretary Jay Johnson. And this might surprise you because what was revealed in this interview was in line with what many conservatives have been saying of late. And that is, what about what Obama did to families at the border? And they talked about that. Listen first to Cut 5.
I want to talk to you about some specific things. I'm not playing the political blame game. I'm talking about issues. And one of them, the president says, and the Trump administration, that part of the problem is a measure that was written by Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein in 2008 that became law. If a minor, an unaccompanied minor or child comes across the border from Mexico or Canada, we can send them immediately back to their country. But under the Feinstein Amendment, if it's a non-contiguous country like Central America, right, not right on our border, they can't be sent back immediately. Hasn't that contributed especially to the spike in unaccompanied minors coming into this country over the last few years?
Oh, Chris, what you're referring to is the TVPRA passed in 2008. And as you point out, it does say that an unaccompanied child from Central America, a non-contiguous country, cannot be sent back immediately. Now, there's a certain amount of common sense behind that, because you can't just simply send an unaccompanied child back across the southern border into Mexico. You cannot repatriate a Guatemalan to Mexico. And so that law, which has a certain level of protections for children, we're talking about unaccompanied children, 5 and 6 year old kids, requires that the Department of Homeland Security place that child with HHS within 48 hours. A deportation proceeding is commenced, and the child has a right through a lawyer to assert a claim for asylum.
Okay, did you catch that? So this goes back to this amendment put forth by Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein 10 years ago that became law. So these children cannot be sent immediately back to their countries if they are non-contiguous countries. Last I checked, Feinstein was a Democrat. Yes. Now, they go on to talk a little bit more about how the Obama administration handled this situation back in 2014. Listen to Cut 6.
Let's look, because you mentioned it, at how the Obama administration and you as Secretary of Homeland Security handled this back in 2014, when there was also a spike in children, most of them unaccompanied, coming across the border. You started jailing entire families. In some cases, not a lot, but in some, you separated children from their parents. And these pictures that we're putting up from 2014 show pictures of unaccompanied minors in effect, jail situations. As you look back on that, did you handle it so well?
Well, Chris, without a doubt, the images and the reality from 2014, just like 2018, are not pretty. And so we expanded family detention. We had then 34,000 beds for family detention, only 95 of 34,000 equipped to deal with families. So we expanded it. I freely admit it was controversial. We believed it was necessary at the time. I still believe it is necessary to maintain a certain capability for families. We can't have catch and release.
Okay, let me get this straight. Jay Johnson, who served as DHS secretary under Barack Obama, said they did what Mike Wallace said. They jailed entire families and in some cases separated children from their parents in pictures that are still widely available. So I wonder if Joe Scarborough and Steve Schmidt and the rest of the people at MSNBC would say that Barack Obama is a terrible human being who's going to hell because he didn't follow Matthew 25. And I wonder if they would say of Barack Obama that he created internment camps for babies and toddlers. Because they didn't say that about Barack Obama on MSNBC, according to those clips I just played. They said it about Mike Pence. What did Mike Pence have to do with it? Other than the fact that he's the Christian they can pick on in the Trump administration. He's your go-to punching bag when it comes to religious yelling. Let's just put it that way. So they said in the Obama administration, they believed it was necessary at the time. And Jay Johnson said it's still the case that he believes it was necessary to separate families at the border. All I'm saying is what's good for the goose is good for the gander, I thought. McClatchy had written a piece, yes, Obama separated families at the border too, and pointed out Obama prosecuted mothers for coming to the U.S. illegally. He fast-tracked deportations, and yes, he housed unaccompanied children in tent cities. For much of the country, the prevailing belief is that Obama was the president who went easier on immigrants. Neither Obama nor Democrats created Trump's zero-tolerance policy, which calls for every illegal border crosser to be prosecuted and leads to their children being detained in separate facilities before being shipped to a shelter and eventually a sponsor family. But Obama's policy helped create the roadmap of enforcement that Trump has been following and building on. Well, it goes beyond that. They separated children from their families. They put into place, the Democrats put into place this amendment from Dianne Feinstein in 2008 that created the problem of not being able to send kids back. And by the way, might I just point this out, lest it doesn't seem completely obvious. Who is really guilty here of creating a bad situation for children? Is it not the people who are coming here with their children illegally? I understand people want to come to the United States. I understand people want a better life for their families. We get that. We're a nation of immigrants. Do it legally. Do things the right way. Everything ends up being the GOP's fault. Everything ends up being Trump's fault. It just gets old. And by the way, the president said yesterday he wants Congress to increase funding for the wall in order to get the project done more quickly. And I agree with that. CNBC reported the president's planned request has major political implications. He's previously threatened to shut down the government at the end of September if lawmakers don't meet his funding demands for the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. And Trump said, we're going to ask for an increase in wall spending so we can finish it quicker. It stops the drugs. It stops the people that we don't want to have. We're spending $1.6 billion now. There's a plan for another $1.6 billion, but I'd like to ask this room if we could increase it. He said this during a meeting with Republican members of Congress about immigration. If you don't want to have a constant flood across your borders, then you do need the wall. You do. And then you can decide who should come here legally and who should be allowed in and who should get asylum and who should be considered a needy refugee or whatever it is. But have a common sense immigration policy and don't allow the left to open the borders and have a permanent majority in the United States. And we know that's what it's all about ultimately anyway. Thank you for joining us. We are out of time. God bless you. Thanks so much for being here every single day. We'll see you next time. God bless and take care.